Everybody, we're going to get started. I'm sorry to be the one to interrupt your conversations. It's my great pleasure both to see that you all are enjoying each other's company so much that the dialogue is really difficult to stop, and I feel the same way about everybody who's here. It's wonderful to have the chance to be able to speak with each other, and it was great to see the interactions that are starting. I'm going to introduce this panel, though, because we've got a fabulous panel, and we want to make sure we have time for discussion afterwards. Jessica Ball is going to be moderating this panel. It's my pleasure to introduce her. She's a professor in the School of Child and Youth Care at the University of Victoria. She's worked on research, teaching, and program evaluation projects on early learning and language development for the Open Society Institute, the Aga Khan Foundation, UNESCO, for Canadian CETA. She spent 12 years in Southeast Asia. She understands equity issues from a variety of national and international perspectives, but particular to what we've asked her to bring to this panel, she was for 10 years the co-coordinator of an innovative bicultural post-secondary education program to strengthen Indigenous capacity to design and deliver culturally based early childhood care and development programs. Thank you for being with us and for moderating this special panel.
Thanks very much, Jody, and I'd like to say it's wonderful that you all chose to be here on a beautiful Saturday, spring day, and I'm really delighted to have been invited by Jody and by the committee to participate in this very interesting event. I'm from British Columbia, and it's a tradition where we have not yet struck treaties with most of the Indigenous peoples in British Columbia for us to acknowledge the territory, and so I'd just like to acknowledge that I'm a third-generation Irish-English-Canadian, and I'm a visitor to this territory. I'm grateful to the Mohawk people for stewarding this beautiful land so that we could have this event in this gorgeous facility today. So I've been asked to specifically reflect on my thoughts about educational equity with reference to early childhood in the context of the Indigenous peoples here in Canada. And so I'd like to just provide a little bit of a background. I think that what we're dealing with here in Canada is reflected so much in this poignant statement. We will raise a generation of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children and youth who do not have to recover from their childhoods. This statement, made by many, a consortium of Indigenous organizations here in Canada, reflects the fact that we are attempting to address some of the huge inequities that we're living with today as a result of over 100 years of colonial interventions that have resulted in the devastation of Indigenous communities, families, and educational outcomes for Indigenous children. So while Indigenous peoples here in Canada form only 5% of our population now, there is over twice the birth rate of Indigenous families compared to the non-Indigenous population. And so we have a demographic wave or cascade of young people entering the school system with over twice the number of Indigenous children entering preschools now in Saskatchewan and Manitoba proportionally compared to non-Indigenous children. And so we'll have a young Indigenous population for many, many years to come. At the same time, as despite some exciting innovations that have been reported in some primary and secondary schools, we still have over twice the number of Indigenous children failing out or leaving school early before achieving a high school diploma. And for Inuit people, it's 3.6 times the number that are failing out or leaving school early. So I'd like to reflect on some unique features of Indigenous children's experiences. Of course, we know that there are three major populations that are recognized by the Government of Canada, but in fact there are literally hundreds, 600 or 700 different cultural groups, and there's a great deal of linguistic diversity across Indigenous populations here in Canada. It's a very rural and remote population, with over 50% of Indigenous children living in rural and remote northern areas. So, you know, access, you have to think in special ways about access to education. Now, often when we think about Indigenous children, we hear a litany of pathologies and deficits and what this population doesn't have. We've just collected data with a post-census survey at Stats Canada. The Aboriginal Children's Survey showed some of the perhaps unique strengths or assets that we could build on. One is that many Indigenous children live in three-generation families and interact on a daily or weekly basis with grandparents. Many Indigenous children are still participating in cultural ceremonies regularly. The survey asked about weekly, monthly, and yearly. Also, many Indigenous families subscribe to a view that children grow up rather than needing to be raised up. And this is a distinction that people have looked at the socialization especially language socialization and the cultural nature of raising children, have noted has, you know, some real implications for education and for engaging parents in thinking about what children need in order to develop optimally. So, for example, the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples noted that, according to Aboriginal people, children are gifts from the spirit world, and they carry within them the gifts that manifest themselves as they become teachers, mothers, hunters, counselors, artisans, and visionaries. So children are very much valued by Aboriginal peoples, and they may often subscribe to a view that if children are left more or less alone, they'll begin to manifest their strengths and talents and directions for life. Just to review very briefly, there are many different indicators of inequities among Aboriginal peoples. Half of Indigenous children live well below the poverty line. 33% of First Nations and Métis families live in substandard and overcrowded housing. There are many different health, development, and learning difficulties that are reflected in various data sources, all of which are generally understood as reflecting the cumulative effects of poverty. First Nations children have been disproportionately diagnosed with various learning disabilities. Some people say that there are more children living in foster and adoptive homes now than there were children interned in the residential schools in the 1950s. Several investigators have reported high rates of nutritional inadequacy prenatally and in young children, and there's a persisting problem in many of the rural and remote areas with food and water contamination. So these are serious structural problems that affect educational outcomes from young children. Now, we've heard from WHO, we heard yesterday, that early childhood programs can be a powerful equalizer. At least we know that providing quality early childhood development programs can help to at least lay the foundations for early school, for readiness to learn. So now we think, those of us that are working with Indigenous populations in Canada and around the world think that early childhood is really where we need to make our primary investment. And thinking about some of these characteristics can help us understand why early childhood might be a very, very important place to focus our attention. Most Indigenous parents are first or second generation survivors of the Indian residential schools. So, and we know that many survivors have not experienced positive childhood or positive educational experiences themselves. And so early childhood programs that include parents may be a very important intervention. 35% of Indigenous children live in single-parent households. So caring for children and supporting single parents and caring, providing quality care for, children before they reach school may be very, very important. There's a 7 times greater proportion of adolescent mothers in the indigenous population. And 40 to 50% of indigenous children don't have access to the kinds of facilities that we often see in urban areas that are supportive of young children's development. Also, if we think about early childhood programs in a holistic way, programs that are community fitting and culturally congruent and that include nutrition, health, as well as language development, cognitive stimulation, early identification and early intervention, and involving parents, this might be a very powerful equalizer in terms of getting children ready for school. And yet, our research shows that under 20% of Indigenous children in Canada have access to any kind of early childhood care and development program, let alone quality care programs. And an OECD report, John Bennett, reported in 2003 that less than 10% of Indigenous children have access to any early childhood program that reflects in any way their culture or their language of origin. So just reflecting on those that kind of background information there, and thinking about the objectives of our session today, there are 4 policy areas that I think we need to address to reduce the equity gaps. The first is structural reforms to improve housing conditions and household incomes, sanitation and transportation. The second is educational institutional reforms. There are many things that we could do at the school level to increase the likelihood of